Hello, my name's Dan Kalinski. I'm a QC at Landmark Chambers. One of my areas of specialism is non-domestic rates. This podcast is entitled Key Takeaways from the Supreme Court's Decision in the ATM Case. Now, I'm recording this podcast on Wednesday, the 20th of May, 2020, which is the day that the Supreme Court handed down judgment in the decision of Cardtronics and others against Sykes Valuation Officer. And so this podcast offers my initial reflections on the potential implications of that judgment. Now, the outcome of the judgment was that the Supreme Court dismissed the Valuation Officer's appeal and upheld the conclusions and essential reasoning of the Court of Appeal. So the upshot is that the ATMs under consideration in that case are not separate rateable hereditaments. In almost all of the cases, the logic turned on the conclusion that the host store owner was in rateable occupation of the ATM site. There's one exception to that, which I will come to when I discuss the detail of it. But essentially, the reasoning of the Court of Appeal has been upheld. So I'm going to focus this around six key points, some of which are more significant and involved than others. But this is to sort of try to give you some indications of where this case might be significant in other areas. So the first point is a very general point, quite a short point, but it is that the Supreme Court has emphasised the need for appellant courts to show great respect for specialist tribunals in rating cases. Now, that is consistent with the approach that applies in other areas of specialist tribunals and is consistent with the fact that the upper tribunal is the tribunal of fact. The Supreme Court emphasised in particular the valuable groundwork which makes it possible to narrow down the scope of investigation and to concentrate on the critical points of contention. So that valuable groundwork was undertaken by the upper tribunal, and great deference is shown to their reasoning and their analysis, and as part of this structure of respecting specialist tribunals and essentially discouraging appeals against the findings of those tribunals and the application of specialist law in those areas. So that's my first takeaway, is the strong reinforcement of the need for respect for specialist tribunals in rating as in other areas. My second key takeaway is the theme which I think is apparent in the Supreme Court's approach is to emphasise that context is everything. Now, they commented that rating law had proved to be remarkably resilient and adaptable to technological developments and new forms of property. I've taken that from paragraph 26 of Lord Carnworth's judgments. Therefore, it's always necessary for the law to evolve, but in evolving, it's really important not to overstate the significance of propositions of law articulated in leading cases. So in the Supreme Court's judgment, they commented in paragraph 27 that it may be misleading to extract particular statements from the speech of Lord Russell in Westminster and to treat them as definitive propositions of law without regard to their overall context. As Lord Russell himself was at pains to emphasise, the principles as stated by him provide no more than a framework for the evaluation of the facts of any particular case. Now, I think the context for those observations are that the structure of the Valuation Officer's case relied very heavily on placing the ATM sites into that intellectual reasoning from Lord Russell, and in particular the emphasis on focusing on the putative hereditament in question and looking at it from the standpoint of control. And what the Supreme Court has done effectively is it has pressed the pause button on that kind of approach and has sort of offered a greater contextual significance, which emphasises other strands in the law. And I think there are quite important echoes of what the Supreme Court has done to the approach that was adopted by Lord McGee in the Scottish Lands Tribunal case of Clydesdale. Now, it's fair to say that the Supreme Court doesn't expressly emphasise Lord McGee's analysis, but that did feature quite heavily in argument. And one of the key points in that analysis was to say, we need to be really quite careful about taking Lord Russell's intellectual framework too far in a way that produces an analysis that is too far removed from a fact-sensitive, sensible and workable approach that takes sufficient count of points of factual context. And I think there is a parallel there between what Lord Carmarthen has done in the Supreme Court's decision and what Lord McGee did in Clydesdale. And it is saying, hold on, let's not push these points too far. Let's take account of the factual context in which they arise. So that's my second key takeaway. My third key takeaway is that in legal terms, the landlord control principle, as it has been termed, has become much more significant. Now, that is the intellectual framework for determining that the rateable occupier of the ATM sites was the host store rather than the ATM operator. And this was set out in great detail in the Court of Appeal in Lord Justice Lindblom's analysis, who drew it all together very carefully around an analysis of the Scottish cases. And the landlord control principle dates back to the English 19th century case of Halkin, where actually it was described in that case by Lord Herschel as a familiar principle. And the point is that where a person already in possession has given to another possession of a part of his premises, if that possession be not exclusive, he does not cease to be liable to the rate, nor does the other become so. And that was seen as a critical part of the context here, because the store in question was otherwise a single unit of property. When one analysed how the ATM related to the rest of the store and to the storekeeper's purposes, having regard to the nature of the property and having regard to the structure of the rights and the close connection with the retail purposes of the host store, it was held that there had not been a parting of possession. And it's critical on the facts of Cardtronics to date that back to the express finding on the part of the upper tribunal that the stores had not parted with possession. They were in actual occupation of the ATM sites, and that there was a close connection between the purposes for which the ATM was on the store and the retail purposes of the storeholders in every case. And it was those findings which led to the emphasis on the landlord control principle, which, as I've said, dates back at least to the 19th century case of Halkin, but in that case it was already identified as a familiar principle. So I think what's happened here is that there has been quite an important shift of emphasis, because Lord Russell had characterised the landlord control principle as exceptional. And in the case of Vitesse in the Court of Appeal, there were some much cited observations of Lord Justice Sedley saying that that was an exception to the general principle. And I think the Supreme Court have said, no, it's not necessarily an exception. Contextual factors might mean that the landlord control principle is a better fit for the analysis. And in the particular factual circumstances of the ATM cases, they were a better fit for the analysis. And they weren't therefore an exception. They were part of the law which fell to be applied. applied. So my third key takeaway then is that the landlord control principle will assume greater significance where the context fits that principle, and that there is now a clear intellectual framework that this is capable of being part of the general principles to be applied in determining rateable occupation, rather than a narrow exception to an approach that is set out in authoritative terms in Westminster. So the increased significance of the landlord control principle going forward. The fourth principle is that the distinction between internal and external ATMs is now, I think, of less importance in ATM cases. That distinction had been held to be of critical importance by the upper tribunal, and it was also a distinction that had seemed to be of very great significance when one looked at the Scottish cases, although the circumstances of the cases in consideration in Cardtronics fell between the established Scottish cases. So I think, just to cut to the chase on this, where we are now is that on Cardtronics' decision, an internal movable ATM was held based on the specific factual findings not to be capable of being a hereditament in the facts of that case. Now, that would that concern just one movable ATM in a Tesco store, and effectively the Supreme Court upheld the upper tribunal's finding that the essential qualities of this movable ATM were impermanence and mobility. And the Supreme Court said that was a finding of fact that was open to them and did not involve any error of law. All of the other ATMs were held to be capable of being hereditaments, but were held, when the facts were considered against the legal background, to be in the rateable occupation of the host, and therefore not a separate hereditament from the remainder of the store. And common to that analysis is the fact that there was no parting of possession, that there was a clear link between the role of the ATM fulfilling the purposes of the retail store. And therefore, it was held not to be analogous to the position in the Bank of Ireland case, where in the Bank of Ireland case, it had been held that there was no direct link between the ATM and the post office use, and that there was in effect an independent, uncontrolled occupation by the bank for the purposes of the bank. And in the ATM cases in the Supreme Court, that was held not to be the case in relation to any of the ATMs, because of the nature of the properties, because of the nature of the contractual arrangements, because of the fact that there had been no parting of possession, and critically because there was a close purposive link between the presence of the ATM being part of the offer of the retailers in question and the fulfilment of their retail purposes. And the Supreme Court has essentially upheld the approach taken by the Court of Appeal. It's set out in a lot more detail in Lord Justice Limblom's approach, but it is upheld by the Supreme Court. And the short point is that in that particular context, the landlord control principle provides a better and more credible framework for analysing, and that therefore that supports the conclusion that the ATM site is in the rateable occupation of the host retailer. So the upshot of that is, it seems to me, the critical distinction going forward will be, are we in a situation that is analogous to the post office case in Bank of Ireland, where there is no direct link between the ATM and the host store, and that there is, in all the factual circumstances, something that is fairly characterised as an independent, uncontrolled occupation? Or is there a sufficient connection that we are in a category of cases having regard to the nature of the property, the nature of the rights, and an analysis of the purposes, where the landlord control principle provides a better and neater analysis. And there is therefore no sharp distinction to be made between whether the ATM is internal or external, and the upper tribunal's attempts to derive that principle were held not to be sound, and the Supreme Court sided instead with Lord Justice Lindblom's analysis that the Cardtronic cases fell within the landlord control principle and were not directly analogous to the circumstances in Bank of Ireland. So that's the fourth key principle, that it's going to be about whether there is a direct link between the host and the ATM, rather than whether we are dealing with an internal or external ATM going forward. The fifth key takeaway that I would like to emphasise is it seems to me that the Scottish case law is going to be of significant relevance in this case. The Supreme Court has essentially left in place the intellectual structure that's been developed in Scotland. They did that very expressly by reference to Bank of Ireland. More implicitly, they did so, I think, by reference to Clydesdale. That's of a piece with the position in Walway, which drew heavily on the Scottish case law. So I think what practitioners will find is that there will be a valuable resource in some of the Scottish cases in this area. And in particular, for example, in the case of Selecta, there is a discussion of vending machines and a quite careful grappling with the nature of the property, the nature of the rights, and the extent of the purposes. And that will be, I think, a useful example going forward, because it seems to me that it is essentially consistent with the framework which has been emphasised by the Supreme Court in the Cardtronics case. So that's my fifth takeaway, that Scottish case law will continue to be relevant and of importance in this area. My sixth key takeaway is a slightly mischievous one. It is that I think rating lists have just got simpler, or at least shorter. I think the Supreme Court places a very strong handbrake on what was emerging as a very expansionist approach on the part of the Valuation Officer, based upon a rigorous application of Lord Russell's dicta in Westminster, which it said required you to isolate the putative hereditament in question by focusing only on the smaller unit, and then thinking about rateable occupation only in terms of who is in control of that, and whether there is interference with the purpose. Now, when you had an example of a machine, whether it's a photocopier, whether it's an ATM, whether it's a children's ride, or even whether it is an Oyster card reader, if you define the putative hereditament as the site of that machine and you focus your inquiry only on whether or not anybody's interfering with that, it seems to me that it produced only ever one answer, which was compartmentalisation. And the break on that is, I think, twofold. Firstly, you've got to take account of the overall context, and that includes the observation in paragraph 15 of the Supreme Court's decision that rateable occupation and the nature of the hereditament are closely connected. Now, there is, in the Scottish case of Clydesdale in Lord McGee in the Scottish Lands Tribunal, there is a devastating critique of the self-serving nature of a quite similar analysis. I think it's fair to acknowledge that that doesn't find its way in the Supreme Court's analysis. But it seems to me that what the Supreme Court has done is it has seen that pure Westminster approach applied without sufficient regard to the context will lead to a never-ending atomization of the rating list, breaking it down into smaller and smaller components. And that is an approach which lacks the necessary contextual analysis. And so there is, I think, a very hard break on the logical implications of that approach. So I would expect rating lists to get much shorter, for it to be much harder for items of machinery to be placed as separate items in the rating list because the overall context and the potential applicability of the landlord control principle seem to me to provide a way of allowing for a more contextually sensitive analysis for such circumstances. So I would expect there to be fewer rateable hereditaments, no children's rides, no movable machines, and for there to be a retraction of the approach of compartmentalisation of the rating list. That said, I think the actual nature of the inquiries into rater occupation have probably got more fact-specific and slightly more involved. And so we might find that there are more factual disputes about how these principles are to be applied. But I think in general, there will be a much greater tendency to unify units around the more logical host store than to move towards the compartmentalisation, which prior to this decision was becoming flavour of the month on the part of the valuation officer. So that's my sixth and final reflection on this. Before I close this podcast, I would like to just acknowledge the fact that the Cardtronics decision is the final rating decision of Lord Carnworth in the Supreme Court. He has been involved in six rating cases during his time on the Supreme Court. I think by my calculation, those are Woolway, Monk, Iceland, Terillium Telereal, UKI Kingsway, and now Cardtronics. The law of rating has, I think, benefited greatly from having an experienced and specialist rating practitioner on the Supreme Court. I'd just like to pay tribute to the enormous contribution to the law of rating that Lord Carnworth has made during his tenure on the Supreme Court. So that brings to a close this podcast. I hope it's been of some interest to you. Please do feel free to contact me with any feedback or comments, either on LinkedIn or by email to dkolinsky@landmarkchambers.co.uk. That's dkolinsky at landmarkchambers.co.uk. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye.